Are you Carlos's angry appendix? Did you create the best feel-good story in F1 in decades? And on a scale of 1 to Logan Sargeant, how disappointing was Max's race weekend? Welcome back to Tinfoil Helmets, your occasional spicy hot take roundup with all the latest F1 rumors, and even more this week, and with conspiracy theories to back them up. Everything here we have researched for hours to make sure it's totally founded in logic, reason, and truth. Or not. Who knows? All right. That was Australia. Did we get anything right in our predictions?
Yes!
Kind of.
Really?
No. Oh, little, what? First on the board is Ricardo disappoints. Yes, he did. That's a full point.
He did move up to 12th by the end of the race, but when your teammate's in the points and you started last because you couldn't get a lap in Q1, yeah, I think you disappointed.
And because other people in front of you dropped out. That's how he moved up.
Details.
And the Sauber team forgetting how to change wheels.
Hey, he is better than the Alpine's cars.
That's true. I will give him that.
Max equals 10 wins. No, Max did not equal 10 wins.
He did not.
But next weekend, or 2 weekends from now in Japan, he'll have the opportunity to start the streak all over again.
It gives him something to look forward to.
Right. Max doesn't take part. Yeah, kind of, when you stop after three laps.
Maybe in future when I'm catching these psychotic ideas that I'm coming up with, I should couch it as Max does not finish the race.
There you go. This was his first DNF since Australia 2022. That is an equally unlikely prediction.
Indeed.
Yeah. Stage 6 of Hornergate will happen. Surprisingly, I feel like everything was quiet on the Christian Horner front.
Yeah, it's pretty quiet. There was the FIA starting an actual investigation after somebody filed a complaint, which apparently was the first one, but then they came out and said it was the third one. But nothing really happened, so nothing's going on. So, still waiting.
And then I think I saw something, I think, about like Max showed support for the team or something like that.
Yeah, he was asked about leaving and going to Mercedes, and he said, "I'm staying here because I love this team and it's amazing."
Rah, 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 go team.
Indeed.
All right, I think we need to get to between race drama and what consumed you and I for an ungodly amount of time.
Yes, this was important. It changed everything in my Twitter feed. It was amazing. Would you like to, seeing as you are the instigator of bringing me awareness of this situation?
And that would be, where is Kate Middleton? Yes, surprisingly, the F1 Conspiracy Podcast also is very into where was Kate Middleton. After the UK Mother's Day totally photoshopped post, it was lovely.
It was that Photoshop gate was terrible. That was, yeah. Everybody could have done better in that situation. And in light of what came out recently, which was yesterday, I think it in some respects makes that story look even worse.
Yeah, and I think also, weirdly, it proves that everybody was right. They were trying to hide Kate Middleton.
Indeed.
Yeah. And all those probably were body doubles that we were seeing in Photoshop pictures. And I don't think she was really in that car still. I think that was something else. And yeah.
It probably was somebody else completely. That stated, we should reiterate for the record that we do hope that she has a speedy recovery. And
absolutely.
That all goes well. And it's a terrible situation, but... they could have handled the whole thing a whole lot better.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want two royals coming down with cancer in the span of a month. That's terrible.
Yeah, that's a bad idea. Let's not do that.
Yeah, it was an interesting, I guess, win for the conspiracy theory folks.
Yes, I will say it was an interesting diversion for the social medias for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, this is by far my favorite level of conspiracy theory, where the stakes are very low, as in, like, what are the ramifications if they are actually hiding Kate? Turns out the ramifications are Kate has cancer. We hope Kate feels better and gets better.
Yes.
Moving on to Formula One stuff.
Yes, we should probably talk about that. Oscar has signed for till the end of 2026 with McLaren, because apparently he doesn't suck. I was actually going to surprise, not that they signed him, but that they chose to do it at this point, but I think if there's one thing that's true about Zach Brown is he likes to lock his drivers up real early, and given the wave of the 2025 seat shuffle and silly season, maybe this is actually a pretty smart idea, but yeah, I think he's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he had a pretty good race weekend.
Yeah.
you know, there was a little bit of booing that happened, but we'll talk to that. I think it's a very bold move from Zach Brown. Yeah, I mean, hey, there's always IndyCar. Formula One doesn't work out for Oscar.
True. Is there a conveyor belt of Australians to IndyCar?
No, but if anything, McLaren might need to start a V8 supercar team just as a place to park all these Australians with long contracts that they no longer want in Formula One.
Yes, exactly. Next item.
Wouldn't you want to see Daniel Ricciardo and Oscar Piastri doing V8 supercars around Mount Panorama?
I want to see Danny Ric do that. I'm not sure that's Oscar Piastri. I think Oscar Piastri, this is going to sound weird. I think he's actually got more skill than Danny Ric.
At this point, yes.
Yes.
So Adrian Newey's going to Ferrari?
Everybody in Italy says he's going to Ferrari, which, given that Italians and Ferrari rumors are pretty good, because basically there's no such thing as privacy in Ferrari in Italy, I think there's a good chance that it may not yet happen, but I think it's a realistic rumor, as in there are actual serious conversations happening, but it's going to be interesting. The question is, how long is his gardening leave?
That is a good question, because how long is gardening leave? Like 9 months, 12 months?
It depends on your contract. Sometimes it's, you know, 3 months. Usually in the case of high-level F1 people, it actually can be a full season. It's a full 12 months.
All right,
I think when Andrew Newey went on his his gardening leave from Williams to go to McLaren, I think that was 12 months.
Well, let's see. If you want to have Adrian build the 2026 car, granted, he already probably has 2026 car thoughts, so that's okay. You need to have him. It needs to be pretty quick. Like,
it needs to be in the next few months.
Yeah.
And also this week, Red Bull did a social media post where they showed off their startup of the 2026 engine.
I saw that.
So it's interesting. I'm very curious to see how this plays out, because the timing makes it seem not valuable unless Newey is making a commitment to basically stick around in F1 for a while. It's interesting if you read his book, the one is like how to build a Formula One car or whatever it is. He talks about the few times he nearly went to Ferrari previously. So it's not like, just like everybody nearly goes to Ferrari. But there's also the reason why a lot of people don't go to Ferrari, just I don't want to move to Italy. In his case, I think he didn't want to move his family, but his family's now old and moved out, like they're actual adults. So I don't know whether that makes a big difference. So.
Yeah, it's also, I think there's two questions here of like, how long does Newey want to stick around and do Formula One stuff? Because it's not exactly the easiest schedule for people. And then on top of that, like, how good has Red Bull built people around him? Because, like, we know Newey is going to retire at some point in time.
Yes.
Like, he's not going to be making Formula One cars on his deathbed. Or maybe he will. Who knows? but he will die at some point in time, at the very least. And you need to have a contingency plan for that.
Indeed.
So the question there is, you know, how good has Red Bull put young engineers around him so, you know, to learn, and maybe there's another aero whisperer lurking in Red Bull waiting to take over if Adrian moves on.
I mean, that's the interesting thing when you think about all the people who've been hired away from Red Bull. They're all have been Adrian Newey's proteges in various forms, in various ways, that have gone to other teams, Aston Martin and McLaren and whatnot. And so it's interesting to see whether they've created a conveyor belt where Newey being there prevented people getting the promotion that they wanted, or whether there's something else. The other rumor that ties with this is that also apparently Aston Martin would really like him to go there.
I mean, to be fair, I'm pretty sure there's not a single team that wouldn't love to have Adrian Newey as part of their team. And I think that's also, there's a question there of like, how much is this like, no, don't hire away this person. They're Adrian's protege. No. I firmly believe if they had somebody who they thought was the next Adrian Newey, that they're going to let him go to a different team.
Here's the beautiful conspiracy theory. You sit that person down and you say, we're going to pay you a lot of money and we'd like you to leave and go to another team, and you're to completely destroy their ability to make a car.
Or maybe it's, hey, go to another team, see how they do things. We're going to hire you back in 3 years when Adrian retires.
Indeed, that's an interest. That's a more positive spin on the, I'm going to sabotage the entire field by sending dodgy aerodynamicists to every team.
Well, half the team don't need a dodgy aerodynamicist to sabotage them. They're doing a great job on their own.
Indeed. Speaking of dodgy aerodynamicists and suspectability.
What a great unplanned segue.
Beautiful segue. So the Merck simulator appears to be a copy of EA's F1 2022 with a different skin on it. According to the latest rumors and conjecture, the sim is showing the car 1 second a lap faster than it is, which is conveniently exactly what they said the W13 with zero pods was going to be. I feel like somebody maybe forgot to delete a minus one or a plus one on the lap time to confuse everything. But this does seem pretty bad, and I can't remember which episode it was, but I think I conjectured that their simulator was broken.
You've been speculating that for years now, yeah. And it's come out several times that you are in fact correct, and it's just one of those that they still haven't fixed that problem.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I also think that one of the predictions I had for this season, and I said it absolutely jokingly, was that the W15 was going to be worse than the W14. It is slowly but surely becoming true. They need to fix that quickly, because at this point they're just continuing to go backwards.
It is weird to think that the Merc Zero side pod design that they moved away from might be the most successful design in this formula, because that had a race win and several podiums, and since they've done that, I think they've just gotten a couple podiums like on this new version of their car. So it's, yeah, it's weird to think that the concept they abandoned might turn out to be the best concept they had in this formula. I'm also curious, like, I'm wondering how well the sim correlated last time around, or on all previous formulas, or if they just got lucky.
So I've had this theory with my whole simulator is broken, is that it was luck. And I don't mean that in the case of they really didn't know what they were doing, but I think correlation is it's an art. It is the science in it, but it's an art. And I think Merc got very lucky. Not that it correlated well, but it correlated so well. And it's interesting that if you reflect back, one of the things Ferrari said they were doing in 2021 or 2020, I can't remember which one it was, but like, we have put so much money into our simulator. We have spent so much time trying to get it right. And I think that it's paying off for them. I still think the Ferrari is a slightly weird car, but they've got it and they at least vaguely understand it. One of the key hires recently was they hired I think it was Mercedes, hired the Ferrari simulator tech guy. So,
ooh,
spicy.
That's telling, as we say.
Indeed. So do we count the next item involving a car in a wall as between race drama, or should we save this for later?
Well, we still haven't finished talking about Mercedes in the sense of the former FIA director, or if I have
oh, yes,
came out and
yes.
said that Lewis has no understanding of ground effect cars.
I thought this was particularly harsh. It feels weird to make that conjecture, because I think it implies a whole set of understanding that I don't think this person actually has either about ground effect cars. It seems weird. I do think that they don't understand the car, which I suppose is a reasonable proxy for it, but that's my take. This is also the person who writes on The Race and always seems to be way off with what actually is going on. It's like, oh, I've understood the aerodynamics of all these cars, it's amazing, blah blah blah, and then the car does nothing like he says it would.
I think, talking ahead of The Race real quick, I mean, the fact that Perez went past both Mercedes cars and both of them said, wow, that car is really fast, like, I think it just shows they don't have a handle on this car at all from
no
side.
And they were supposed to be testing the original Bahrain preseason testing floor this weekend, but I heard no commentary on it. And I don't know whether they didn't, and that was just a stupid rumor. They did, and nothing actually happened, or something else. Because it's very weird, because the claim is from Lewis and George, is they put the car on the track at Bahrain, and I'm like, what? And it didn't behave at all like it did in preseason testing. Because both of them were like, man, this car, it's predictable. It does what we say it does. It's great. We just got to narrow it to get it into the optimal window. And now it doesn't go anywhere. It just goes backwards very quickly.
That's not great.
So do we think about Mr. Alex's incident?
I think we can talk about it in a little bit. Because I think if we move on to our occasional segment that we do every time except for one time, does Blank still have a job? Does Logan Sargent still have a job?
No, he doesn't.
Because for this weekend, he didn't have a job.
He was technically unemployed for 5/6 of the weekend.
Yeah, because... And to be fair, I do not blame Williams for that decision. I think that was the right decision.
Yes. If you take all emotion out of it, you're like, statistically speaking, which driver's most likely to get points, it was going to be Alex. And it was his birthday, so double deal that he gets the car.
And he did end up 11th, I think, so he was close.
He was close, but the car really struggled at times.
Yeah, but the fact that the car really struggled at times and he's still that close in...
Yeah.
A car that's, yeah, he was 11th. It was close.
Yep. So it really sucked for Logan. I really feel that properly sucked for him. But I understand the choice.
Maybe next time bring a third chassis just in case.
Maybe have your team and organization sufficiently organized that you are capable of building one, because apparently that's the story, is they just weren't ready.
I saw something over the week that was Formula One related, but kind of not, was somebody, I don't know which Formula One team, but somebody came in and was surprised to find out they were tracking like all their parts and stuff in Excel. And it's like, dude, everybody's using Excel for everything. It's all Excel all the way down.
It was Williams.
Yeah. Perfect. There we go. Yeah.
Yeah. Such is life. And here's the thing, as a tech side job, it could be that they were using Excel, but Excel is a front end to a magical database. We don't know.
I would like to point out that Excel is not a database.
Correct. It is not a database. But it can be used as one on weekends.
Yeah. You hear that, marketing people out there? Excel is not a database. Anyway, Christian Horner still has a job. We didn't think that was going to happen.
No, I'm surprised, but I'm still keeping my bet placed that he doesn't.
Yeah, I know there was a brief window of time there where us and other people on the internet were trying to somehow connect the Red Bull drama to Kate Middleton's disappearance.
Yes, I still think there's a distinct opportunity it was involved.
Yeah, it could have been. I mean, for a while, maybe that's where she was. She was with Red Bull. That was the problem.
Indeed.
Yeah. Daniel Ricciardo.
Oof, Marco called him an old fart. I think that's a bad sign.
Especially coming from an old fart.
Indeed. Not good. Not good to him. It was interesting because Marco's comment was, Yuki needs to be more consistent, and Ricardo, given his age, needs to show performance, I think was what the comment was. Poor Danny. We talked about Logan. Zach Brown still has a job till 2030.
For a while.
Yeah, he's doing pretty good on that one. He can hang back more time in Bahrain, who bought the F1 supercar. Bought the McLaren supercar team.
Yeah, and you had a great theory about Zach Brown that I absolutely loved.
Which is that Zach is gunning for running the whole of McLaren, not just the F1 team.
Oh, I thought Zach was going to run Formula One. I thought that was your theory.
No, it's just going to run the whole of McLaren. But no, I like that's even better. I like your theory. Yes, there we go.
Oh, I misread your theory. Yeah, I think he's trying to do the Ross Brawn thing.
He's trying to do the Stefano De Masica. I can't pronounce his name. I'm a terrible person.
Formula One CEO who moves into run a the whole
but
thing.
But he did a team, and then he did a supercar, because he did Lamborghini, and then he went to run F1. So clearly Zach is going to do McLaren, and then he's going to do F1.
Yeah, and American. So F1 will love that, because they're trying to be all American right now.
Perfect. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it on the who has a job. Of course, I guess the other thing with Danny real quick is, don't you just want him to end up in NASCAR?
Yes, I think that's what he needs to do.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Go to NASCAR and then decide that actually it's not for you and you want to spend time in V8 supercars in Australia.
Or go win Indy and go win Le Mans and just piss off Fernando Alonso.
Yeah. You see, but you can't get the triple. I don't think Danny can get... No, he can't. He can't get Le Mans and IndyCar and... Oh, he's got Monaco, hasn't he?
So, he has Monaco.
Yes.
He's got the hard one.
Yes. Good point. Only by luck.
I think it was a lot of skill that day.
His car was broken.
Yeah, a lot of luck, a lot of skill, and a lot of Monaco being unable to pass.
Exactly. Qualification? So Hamilton got knocked out in Q2.
He did.
But what really blew my mind is I was watching his lap times, and he was constantly in Q1. It's not Q1. Sector 1 and Sector 2 was matching or occasionally like just 1/10 quicker than the people who were hitting the pole times. And then he would lose between 3/4 and a whole second in the final sector. It was ridiculous. Like, you'd watch him and you're like, oh, here comes a brilliant lap. It's going to be fantastic. Here we go. Oh, wait, why is he a second down? It was very strange.
Now I got to look up the sector maps.
But I thought that was... I was trying to work out whether it was because that was bad for the car, whether he chewed his tires up or something else.
Oh, no. See, I was thinking he would have lost a lot of time in Sector 2, where it's like nothing but DRS straights. But yeah, Sector 3 is slow twisty bits. So I guess the car's not good in slow twisty bits.
But it's not good at the fast twisty bits either. So what's it good at? Oh, wait, nothing.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I thought that was interesting. But, you know, that sucks. Danny goes out in Q1. Was it Q1?
Yeah, he had a track time. He had a time deletion, right?
Oh, yeah, that was it. I was like, oh, he did pretty good, and then that track time deleted, which I feel like is the it is the curse of all drivers who are trying to prove they're still worth something, is they slap in a banger lap, and then it gets deleted for track limits.
Which is especially impressive around Australia, where it's like track limits is usually you're in the grass.
Yes.
So the fact that he was able to find a spot to cut and get a time deleted, like, very nice try, Danny.
Yeah, nice try. I think he might have been one of only two people who had their track time deleted.
Lance Stroll out-qualified Fernando Alonso. Is Stroll's qualifying finally here?
No, I think it's just luck.
Okay. what?
I just yes, move on.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Do we need to talk more about? No, it's not Lance's luck. It's skill. He's such a better driver.
There we go. We're being paid off by Aston Martin.
Yeah. Carlos on quali day was the fastest Ferrari driver. Normally one lap Leclerc is good for that sort of stuff, but Charles put it on the Carlos put it on the second row.
Yeah, not today. Not today. And he was missing an appendix. It was great. I thought those laps were really good. And he pushed Max. Like, Max had to try really hard. Maybe not really hard, but he actually had to try to put it on pole.
Have you seen the overlay between their quality laps?
I have not.
They're coming through, let me get the corner, coming through 9 and 10. Carlos went a little too deep and oversteered, and that caused him to slide a little bit. And that's where he lost pretty much all of his time to Max. It was right there.
So close. So close.
Yeah. Amazingly close, actually.
Did you see him when he got out of the car? It looked like he'd done five rounds with Mike Tyson.
Yeah, he is still hurting from appendix surgery. That is very clear.
Yes, which I think makes that lap time even more impressive.
Well, see, he wanted to go as quickly as possible so he could get done with the lap as quickly as possible because he hurt.
Yeah, you see that. This is the same thing with software people, right? We're all lazy inherently, so we do the things so that we never have to do it ever again, but it takes five times longer.
So Perez was actually pretty quick, but also very naughty.
What was the naughtiness that he did?
He impeded and got a penalty.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Was it three places?
Yep.
Yep. It was interesting that I don't think what was he on third before he got his penalty?
Yeah, he was on third, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't bad, but, you know.
But I think, looking ahead to the race, I think that ruined part of his race. Anyway, oh yeah, and Max is still really fast.
When he wants to be, he can do it.
I mean, do you think they even have the engine turned off of idle during the practice sessions?
No, I don't.
Yeah, it's got to be turned so down.
At this point, I think Max is entering his Lewis phase, if that makes any sense. Because
he could not touch the car until Q1 and still put it on pole?
Yes, and the most important thing is that everybody's like, oh, I think I've got him. And then he's like, oh, I'm going to have to actually try now, aren't I? And then just goes boom and slams in a banger lap. Like, if you watch back on 2020, you could see him do that. People would be going around and he'd be like, well, I'm only P3. And he's like, I suppose I better go and put some effort in now. And then slams it into P1.
I think he's also gotten a lot calmer since he's won a couple drivers' championships. Yes. In the sense of, yes, like, yeah, he definitely wants to win every weekend. And he was definitely annoyed about this weekend. But at the same point in time, it's like, okay, there's another. I'm still in this. It's fine. He's still leading the championship.
Yep, absolutely. And he has the confidence in the car and the team and his own skills that he's not so worried about it.
All right. Should we talk about the race?
We should talk about the race.
I just want to say, hell yeah, softer tires. I've been wondering why they haven't done this for a while. Let's move a step softer and make it a two-stop.
I think I agree. I think in the context of like adding refueling adds a bit of jeopardy and introduces kind of a weird element of skill. I think going one step softer also does that because it gives the tire whisperers an opportunity to try something, try their skills to maximize the strategy. But I also think it gives the strategist an opportunity to do something weird, like, you know, sit on hards for the entire race and do a one stop.
And the interesting thing is with the hards is they were talking about this at the end of the broadcast is on this new mandatory allocation that they're doing, you only get two sets of hard tires and everybody pretty much knew, oh, we're going to need both sets of hard tires for the race. So you ended up in a situation where you're on the primary race tire that you want to be on and nobody's run it all weekend.
Indeed. No data, no understanding. Jeopardy.
Yeah, just a little bit of a chaos machine.
Exactly.
And I think that's the big thing of people, you know, you don't want so much of a chaos machine that it feels like you're putting your finger on the scale. But I think that's just enough of a chaos machine that, like, good drivers will make the difference and Logan Sargeant will sit on the sidelines.
Yes, I agree with that. Because Logan Sargent should have been able to donate his tires to other people.
Yeah.
They should have let him donate his tires to other people for a fee so that Williams has enough money to be able to build him a chassis.
That would be hilarious if, like, they gave all the teams, all the drivers the same tire allocation, and then you were allowed to, like, trade inside the pool of, like, hey, Aston, I have this hard tire. I'll trade you for 3 softs.
Yes.
Like, Max doesn't need all the softs for how few runs he does in Q3. Let's trade some softs for another hard.
Love it. I like that idea. That's brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant.
Because then we still keep the same tire environmental impact that we're going for.
Yep.
You know, just, oh, you need more softs? We happen to have some over here.
Exactly. Perfect. Perfect.
Speaking of the softs, Lewis started on the softs. He was the only driver to start on the soft tire.
He was also the only driver with a set of new softs because he got knocked out in Q2.
Well, there you go.
I'm not sure it really worked for him. I mean, putting aside the fact that his engine died halfway through, I'm not sure it really worked for him. What was even more weird is that he stopped at the same time as everybody else, which I think made sense for him because it was a soft tire and they got eaten, and everybody else was on the mediums and they're like, I'm going to stop at the same time because I've eaten my tires too. So who knows?
Yeah. The soft tire didn't seem to be that great.
No. It was not long for this universe.
Yeah, and so it was a curious choice to start Lewis on that anyway. And I think I'll want to talk more about this later, but it's very curious to me that, you know, I imagine you have meetings post-qualifying and even before the race about strategy. What do you think you're going to do? And it strikes me as very weird that you're sitting on the grid or you've just in your formation lap or I forget exactly when it was, but it was I'm not sure about these tires. Yeah. So you haven't even done the formation lap. You drove to the grid. You could have driven to the grid on a set of soft tires and gone, no, guys, I don't think this is it. But it seems very weird to me that, you know, that was the moment Lewis decided to say, I'm not sure about these tires, guys.
Yeah, I do wonder whether part of it was just they got the temperature, the prediction wrong. Because I think that was the implication, but I don't know. Bit strange.
And then so the race started. Max got off really well and was looking really great. And then apparently he had a brake that was stuck on from lights out.
Yes. Did you see the little bit of the replay? I can't remember whether they showed it later or whether I saw it on the internet, where he goes into something like, I think it's T1 or something. And his whole back end just slides out. Like, it's not it wasn't like a Tokyo Drift scenario. It was like, nope, that's doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, that's what caused Carlos to get passed.
No, it was before that.
Oh, it was before that.
There was one earlier where he comes into turn one, which is why I think it could have been on the opening lap. But he does it, and it just goes, it just doesn't stop, and it goes sideways, and it was all over the place. Because I think that was just before the radio where Max was like, it's all loose. And I'm like, what do you mean it's loose? And then they explained.
So. Yeah, I'm used to hearing that in NASCAR. Yeah, I think, first off, Martin Brundle said it at the end of the broadcast. And honestly, I think we needed a weekend without Max Verstappen to, like, Formula One needed that race.
Yes, I agree. Although, if it's the only race in the season, I'm not sure it was worth it.
Yeah, I think it was. But I think it's also interesting of how quick that Red Bull is with a stuck brake.
How quick that Red Bull is with a stuck brake and Max Verstappen driving it. Because I don't think Perez would have been able to do quite so well with a stuck brake.
Do you want to talk about Perez?
In a moment, because I have one theory about the stuck brake.
Okay.
So all of the brouhaha that's been going around with Hornergate and all the things that's going on causing discord and upset and distraction in the team means that the team didn't quite do the right thing because they were distracted by, you know, possible existential threat. And that's what's caused it. So that's my theory anyway.
The stuck brake is a metaphor for the Red Bull team?
Exactly. They are stuck in a doom loop.
Until they explode wonderfully in the pit lane.
Exactly. Stage 6, son. Stage 6.
That was a cool explosion. That was a very cool explosion.
That was. And I actually, when I saw it, did you see there were marshals standing right by it? So I hope the marshals don't get a lung full of carbon fiber.
That would be bad. You don't want that.
No.
We can talk about Perez.
Let's talk about Perez. What do you want to say about Perez?
So he started out of position and then lost a position.
Yep.
And then apparently once he got past Fernando, he had floor damage and that limited his time.
But where did he get the floor damage? Like, okay, we went past Nando, but like what happened to get, they didn't hit. I don't think he went off.
Ran wide and went over a curb?
Maybe.
I think it's also, it might be floor damage and not really floor damage. There were some air quotes there.
Yes.
And I think to a point, if he spent so much time in that race behind Fernando and George trying to make up some time, that I think, because shortly after that, Charles pitted and came out right in front of Sergio. And I think at that point where it's like, oh, we're a pit stop behind somebody who's like 10 seconds behind, it's just bring it home, like hold position.
Yeah.
Because
especially as it's Checo, and you know when Checo is trying extremely hard to make up for looking like an idiot, he has a tendency to bin it.
Yeah, and you also know he can go through the field, and he should have been able to pick up pace on the McLarens at least and get a little closer. But he, I don't know, to me it looked like he was just holding station of like, all right, I'll keep Fernando behind me, which seemed like a good idea in hindsight, and just, you know, stay here.
Yeah, it's interesting. I still think it speaks to a lot about how Checo either can't maximize the car, is just so designed for Max, or I don't know, something else. It was weird, especially as Checo's had such a good, strong start to this season in terms of playing second fiddle, and he just couldn't capitalize on a car that should be so fast, right? Like,
I will push back a little on the cars designed for Max. I think Alex Albon, he did a preseason interview that was, or offseason interview that was kind of really talking about it, of, you know, Formula One drivers like a twitchy car. Max really likes a twitchy car, and he equated it to like if you have your mouse turned up to like the fastest tracking, and like, yeah, if you know how to do that, you can be very quick with your mouse, but if you don't, it's going to slow you down.
Yes. I don't think they designed the car for Max. I think that's the way Adrian designs cars. And Max is perfectly in tune with maximizing that.
It's a very newy thing of, oh, this isn't a car problem. This is a driver problem. You just need to be a better driver. I've built a great car.
That's why he's so perfect for Ferrari, because all Ferrari do is they blame the driver.
Yeah, perfect.
Should we talk about what happened? Let's talk about McLaren's. I think they did pretty good.
I think they did pretty good too. I think it's very bold for Zach Brown to swap the Aussie for the not Aussie in front of the Aussies.
That was pretty bold. Credit to Oscar, who just got with it and got on with life. And so that was,
I mean, I think it was the right call. They were on different tire strategies as far as pit stops go, things like that. And
they were. And I also think Oscar is still new.
Lando was starting to close up on Charles there at the end. So,
indeed.
You know,
and yeah. Oscar went off and lost 4 seconds because he went off into the gravel. And I think that was just, you know, late in the race, et cetera, et cetera. These things happened. Like, for me, that was the example of why it was the right thing, even when they were off on different strategies about why they should swap them, was less the strategy. It was more the fact that you knew that Oscar was likely to not maximize the advantage that he had. So.
Fair enough.
Double points finish for Haas.
They did it. Your prediction of Haas being the worst car is not looking great.
It's not looking good. It's looking a bit like it might be the Sauber. Anyway,
there was a great question that came up during the week of who is going to end the season with more points, Ollie Bearman or the Alpine team?
They need to add Sauber into that because they don't know how to drive cars either, or make wheels, or change wheels.
I think they don't know how to make a wheel nut.
Yeah. The thing that I thought was interesting about Haas here was that Hulk was doing pretty good. Like, I think he got into the points on merit, and I think the retirements, I know that they weren't between those two, but I think the retirements overall is what helped Magnussen get up into the points.
Yeah, I think if Max, well, if Max, Lewis, and George don't retire, like, the Haas does not have a double points finish.
No. Hulk was driving a good race, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think K-Mag maybe should be swapped out for Oliver Bearman.
Ooh. Yeah, but can they afford him?
Ferrari will just pay for him.
Fair enough. I think it is really interesting how maybe Gene Haas was right in all this. That it was Gunter who was the problem.
That's a great question. The cynic in me, and I say this about every time they change a team principal and then a team does good, the team principal that changes on the first of the year doesn't help you fix the car. Because they have no opportunity to make any changes. So the only saving grace in this case is the technical guy is now the team principal. And so he could execute better on a plan that he already had in progress.
Exactly. We should talk about Carlos, though.
Yeah, let's talk about Carlos, and then we should talk about this other item that you've got here related to the Tifosi, and then we should talk about the incident. The incident where George pretends he's a cat.
So, great job, Carlos. I mean...
Yes.
Yeah. He did it. Since he joined with Charles Leclerc, they now both have 3 wins each. They are on equal on wins.
This is just ridiculous.
And in the last 2 seasons, Charles has no wins and Carlos has 2.
The only driver to beat Max Verstappen since his run started of utter amazingness is Carlos Sainz.
Since Azerbaijan last year, so the 4th race on the calendar last year, there have been 2 race winners, Max Verstappen and Carlos Sainz.
Yes, which is why I think Carlos is washed up and should leave Ferrari. Maybe he shouldn't be in F1. Because clearly he's not good.
I think if somebody's auditioning for that Mercedes seat, it's Carlos. Because
do you want that Mercedes seat?
I mean, do you want a Sauba seat?
Marco was on the old social medias blaring today. Carlos is the one of the top runners for consideration for the second Red Bull seat.
I mean, he is a former Red Bull driver. I could see it. Like it's I think if you're Ferrari, you almost got to question, did we put the right guy in the car long term? But they were never not going to give it to Charles.
I know, that's so ridiculous. They should have given it to Carlos. Please. Carlos has shown consistency, evolution, right? Like, I think we look at Charles. Charles came in very high, but I don't think he's evolved since that. I don't think he's improved. He hasn't shown progression.
Yeah,
Carlos has shown so much progression since Toro Rosso into Renault into McLaren and then into Ferrari. Like, man, if he keeps continuing on that trajectory, it's going to be amazing.
I think it's definitely an interesting question of how. I know it was a bit of a meme of like, oh yeah, well Carlos is the better Ferrari driver, but we're getting to a point where it's like, no, Carlos is the better Ferrari driver.
The statistics show that he is a better driver, and he's out there strategizing. Like his name is Fernando Alonso. So I will say one more thing on Carlos. I think that even if Max hadn't had a stuck brake, I think Carlos would have been able to challenge him. I don't think he would have won, as Checo seems to think, but I think he would have been pushing him. If only because you see the lead that Carlos ended up with over Leclerc, which I think extended to 8 seconds at one point. Before he kind of settled in, and I think his tires went off, and I think he was also a bit tired. But I think that shows that's the kind of lead that Max has had this season. I think there's an opportunity that he would have been with Max.
I mean, I think if I remember on like lap 2, those two had a gap over the field.
Yes, they did.
Like I think if Max's car goes on, I think especially given the nature of Albert Park, I think it's very hard for Carlos to get around. I think you might end up in like a undercut overcut battle sort of situation. Yes. But I don't see, you know, I think those two just would have raced off into the distance. And maybe it would have been a case of Max outlast Carlos just because Max didn't have abdominal surgery 2 weeks ago.
Yes, I completely agree. Exactly that.
But yeah. Oh, and then there was a thing that there were some people wondering of if they had swapped Carlos and Charles, Charles would be leading the championship right now.
I am glad we have Fred Vasseur running Ferrari because I think Fred is not, he's not that. If there's a team that thinks and lives and dies by its conspiracy theories, it's Ferrari because Ferrari has its own inside conspiracy theories, Machiavellian nature, and it is wrong. And I think Fred is doing as much as he can to dispel that because that would have been ridiculous. Like if we're talking like, you know, halfway through the season, different conversation. I think it is worth discussing that. But at this point, it's like, this is the 3rd race? Like, come on, people, there's no point in worrying about that.
I think halfway through the season where, like, Charles has a clear lead over Carlos, or even late in the season, I get it. I think that happened to, that happened to Max and Perez. They asked him to swap around, which made sense at the time. But this early, it never does well. And especially, it's like, this was such a good story for Carlos.
Yes.
And like I think that would have like we made a comment at the top of this was the weekend F1 needed where we kind of got rid of Max for the weekend and we got to see all like McLaren and Ferrari battle it out and it was kind of entertaining for no wheel to wheel racing. Yeah. And so you had that, and you know, it would have felt so awful to have a fixed result in a sense.
Yes, I completely agree.
For a driver who kind of by his own admission during the post-race interviews was not on it today.
No, I know. And I credit him for being able to pull that out while feeling like crap. So,
yeah.
Shall we talk about the incident?
The end of the race?
The end of the race. And we should lead into the impact that happened after the race because of the incident that happened in the race. One, that was a pretty bad crash. It was not as severe as it looked when you saw the final frame of the car sitting on the side and George going like, this doesn't seem right. The crash was not that bad.
I feel like I'm in the middle of the road.
Yeah, man, that was not a good place to be. But it was still a pretty bad crash. Also, credit to George. He is the only driver who is able to throw away performance at the end of the race in the last lap. It's like it's just a thing that he does at this point. I'm also not convinced that that car was not seriously damaged. Not because of the crash itself, but the way it finished, which was sitting on its side. If you watch the last like half second of the before it comes to a rest, it slides on its side on the floor. If that doesn't break the floor, I'll be shocked.
Yeah, that's a pretty damaged car.
This led to the second year in a row that Aussie Grand Prix did not finish under normal racing conditions.
True. You know, they were calling for like a red flag. Like, I think George was calling for a red flag. Martin Brundle said, I think they're going to red flag it. But at that point, you're already on the last lap. So like you can't restart. Like yeah, there's.
So George was pretty panicked in the car. He was very panicked when I listened to the, I went back just as they were doing the podium stuff. I went back and listened and George was like high pitched, not quite screaming, but like red flag. No, red flag, please. Oh my God, red flag. I'm stuck in the middle of the road, which I 100% understand.
Yeah, if you're in the middle of the road and you have the underbelly of the car exposed to a car coming around a fast corner, they threw the VSC pretty quick.
Yeah, although Lance Stroll, I haven't listened to the audio, but there was a video of Lance Stroll comes around the final corner, and apparently his engineer kind of was just paying enough attention to pre-warn him as he came around the corner. He came right around the corner and there's the car, but there was enough distance that you could stop and slow down. But it was pretty close. So.
Yeah. And it was Lance. That could have been terrible.
Yeah. Poor Lance. That would have been terrible for Lance, wouldn't it? So the thing that I think that's also interesting about this whole incident was it was chasing Alonso, and everybody thinks, including the stewards, that Fernando Alonso brake checked George. The question is not only does this look bad for the reasons we'll get to in a moment, but does this take away Fernando Alonso from getting the Mercedes seat?
I was going to say, if you want that Mercedes seat, you think you're deserving of that Mercedes seat, you probably shouldn't brake test a Mercedes driver, the golden Mercedes driver.
Indeed, the chosen one. Note, it didn't work out for Bottas very well. He lost his seat.
And he didn't even really ever brake check Lewis.
Exactly. Yeah, it was pretty bad. I don't think Fernando was actually doing anything particularly wrong in this case. Having watched back, you can see in the replay from the onboard, he definitely slows down. But I think George wasn't paying enough attention. I think George was possibly fiddling with the steering wheel. Like, he was looking, but he wasn't looking, and was very surprised by when the car suddenly was, like, you know, running up to him at 300 miles an hour.
Well, they did say he lifted off 100 meters earlier than he did previously, which, that's a very long distance in a Formula One car.
Yeah, Fernando was doing Fernando things, and this is going to sound weird, and I'm no apologist for Fernando and his antics, but I don't think it justified the penalty that he got of 20 seconds. And I think even a 10-second penalty would have been a bit high. And again, I don't think he did it to brake check. I think he genuinely did it in the way that Fernando does it, which is like, I'm going to be mildly surprising. And I think George was caught unawares in a way that Fernando... If Fernando had been behind Fernando, Fernando would have been caught unawares but not like shocked by what happened, and I think maybe that's a mistake on George's part that you're driving behind Fernando Alonso. What else do you expect to happen?
Yeah, definitely it was a weird one with but yeah, I think I'm looking, remembering the tweet I saw, it was like he lifted off then accelerated and then braked. Like, yeah, I understand looking at that. It's probably definitely something Alonso has done before, because I could see it. He was trying to stall out George before the long straight so he could get a better runaway, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably one of those, if George fully sees what's going on, you know, it probably works and doesn't draw the eye of the stewards, but because of the crash, it did.
Yes.
And I would also say that the penalty is probably not unjust.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's because I haven't adjusted to the new ones. I feel like the previous years he'd have got a 5, maybe a 10-second penalty.
So I think, so interestingly in all this, but on the broadcast before the race, they had it's been 30 years since the 1994 Adelaide race with Damon Hill and Michael Schumacher, and Schumacher, you know, takes out Damon and all that, right? And, you know, there was some time of that of, did he do it intentionally? I think yes.
Unquestionably.
Right. But then you go 3 years down the road in Jerez, I think it was Jerez, where Schumacher tries to do it again on Gilles Villeneuve, not Jacques Villeneuve, the son.
The son. I know Ferrari's good, but it's not that good.
Yeah. You know, does it on Jacques. And, you know, they ended up DQing Schumacher for the whole season and said, nope. You're done. And I feel like this is kind of what this was like. I think you're right. It was probably a 5 or a 10 second penalty, but this was a do not do this again sort of penalty.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because apparently Johnny Herbert was on the stewards for this race, which is his first stewarding, I think it was. It's new for this season. So I do wonder whether there's a bit more trying to push that to stop people doing really stupid shit. And it is true, the last 4 or 5 years, there has been a lot of dumb stuff of people not brake checking, but like slowing down and doing tricks to get the DRS, and it was all getting a bit crazy. So it's interesting to see the stewards try to put their finger on that one.
Yeah, I think as somebody who doesn't race cars but races bicycles, like having people stop doing stupid shit is always a good thing.
Yes, I agree. Shall we move on to some spicy takes and rumors?
I think we actually have some this time around.
Yes. So I'm going to open with I'm going to go with both of these because I think they're interrelated. Lewis Hamilton has wasted the best years of his driving at Mercedes since 2021, where the team has given him nothing but a shitbox. They have showed him the door because they wasted those years on his behalf. The reason I say this is Lewis, at the end of 2020 into 2021, and I know he had COVID and he claims that impacted him in 2021. But like that was peak Lewis. Like Lewis was doing great and he was ready to come back in 2022 and like, boom, I'm going to avenge the world. And they gave him nothing. He's wasted some of the best years he has in racing driving around on a tractor. And it's ridiculous.
I'd like to go one step further. And I think that this season they are intentionally nuking him. Just enough, not enough that like will really affect where they end up in the Constructors' Championship, because like they're well clear of Aston Martin. They're probably going to struggle to fight the Mercedes or the McLarens and the Ferraris. So like they can nuke Lewis a little bit and just be like, see, look, we were right to get rid of this driver.
The problem is they don't control the other half of the narrative, which is what happens when Lewis gets in a car that actually can compete with the Red Bulls.
Well, we'll see that next season.
Indeed, we will. But the second part of my kind of interrelated careers being wasted, and I think this one's particularly spicy, Max has wasted the best years of his driving because Mercedes and McLaren, and I suppose Ferrari, have failed to give their drivers a good enough car to challenge him, to make him reach even higher heights. Like, it's not that he's wasted in the context of, like, well, he could have been doing something better, but, like, this is peak Max. Like, Max is at his best, and instead what we've had for the last 40 races is him driving around for 2 hours for no particular good reason, right? Like,
yeah, it says something when, like, what, at Jeddah, he was on his sim rig between qualifying in the race, hanging out with his friends, like, streaming on Twitch.
Yeah. Like,
I am all for, you know, rest, recovery, relaxation, things like that. But it's clearly like, oh, he's not feeling challenged in Formula One. So he's going to go like drive sim rigs with a controller in Jeddah.
Yeah. Like, and I feel like for both of them, like it just feels like I really don't mean wasted is that they could have been doing better things with their life. But there was so much opportunity for both of them in this case. And in the case of Max, his team did the right things and everybody else did the wrong things. In the case of Lewis, the team just gave him a terrible car.
You just want the Formula One season that rarely exists.
Yes, I do. But I feel like more so than many years, the opportunity was there to give us so much greatness. And instead, it's been wasted. And we've wasted how many years recording a podcast and watching races while Max goes around in a circle and we're trying desperately to scrabble around in the gravel and find something exciting that happened in the race.
Fair enough.
They've wasted our time as well.
But you can go back and say, like, Ferrari wasted Michael Schumacher's time by, you know, letting him wrap the season before the winter break or the summer break.
Yes.
McLaren couldn't give Kimi Raikkonen a good enough car to consistently challenge Michael for the win.
Exactly. Michael wasted his time. Ferrari didn't waste his time. Everybody else wasted Michael's time.
Fair enough.
So, next to Wesley Taken rumor?
What, Carlos to Mercedes?
I honestly think it's the worst place for Carlos to go, but I think it's the best driver for Mercedes to pick.
I think in the last couple weeks, I feel like we've gone from Carlos is going to get a drive, but it's going to be on like Sauber or Audi, whatever it is, to like, no, Carlos needs to be in Red Bull or Mercedes because those are the only landing spots, essentially.
There's Aston Martin as well. Because remember, we are in full silly season because Fernando is out of drive. Not out of drive, but his contract is up. And so you've really got... What you're really looking at is a three-way fight between Red Bull and Mercedes and Aston Martin to pick a new driver. And whichever one gets picked first will dictate the remaining two.
But I think Aston right now has not done enough to convince me that they are a top-running team. I think they lucked into being a top-running team in 2023. And I think we were just slowly seeing them fall back to where they should be.
I agree with that. But 2026, with all the people they've hired who have all come off gardening leave, who are now there, it's the opportunity. Much in the same way that Lewis is smart and goes right before the reg change, Carlos going to Aston Martin, if he's looking for opportunity. And if you want to be cynical about it, it's like your choices for a good car, it seems, are Ferrari, McLaren, or Red Bull. And only one of those has an actual seat available. And I don't, as much as I think it might be good for Red Bull, I'm not sure Red Bull's the right seat for Carlos because Carlos wants to win championships and going up against Max in his team, I don't know if that's really going to work.
I mean, it could be good for him at Aston if Aston does step up and,
yep,
you know,
Honda engine could be good.
Oh, yes. Honda in the first year of new engines, that'll go well.
But they've never really given up on the previous one, so I give them a good opportunity. I give them a good chance. So,
yeah, but then you just know you're going to be out of an engine in 3 years.
so true. 100% true. 100% true. So.
I love Honda being in Formula One, but like, could they just make up their mind of if they actually want to be in Formula One?
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, she'll get off the pot. Should we go for the last spicy rumor here that I came up with?
Go for it.
Okay. So in 2020 and 2021, the Formula One management script writers did an amazing job. They wrote some brilliant scripts and they gave us such a fantastic two seasons. We get the peak of 2020 where everybody comes back from the pandemic and they create, you know, the most entertaining sports, the first sport back. And then we have 2021 with Max versus Lewis. Amazing. But then they decided that there was more money out there. And so they quit to go to different sports and they had to like scrabble around and find the good script writers, which they didn't. For 2022 and 2023, we had terrible scripts. They were not very exciting. But now, because FOM decided that they needed something exciting and interesting and they needed to spice that sport back up again, they went and hired some, you know, random hires. And they previously had worked on medical dramas, which is why we've lost an appendix to create the story arc. And remember, if you watch Days of Our Lives, you know, there's always the terrible thing and then there's the shock comeback and we've got to wait for the next phase of this. And so if you look at it right now, those medical drama people are getting it out of their system. And the question is, will they be able to stop from taking other people's appendages, organs, and limbs?
Well, I think after the race, Gunter asked Carlos if everybody should have their appendix removed in the offseason. He said, absolutely. So yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, Fred also discussed about suggesting this to other drivers.
Yeah. But, I mean, it still will... Honestly, this could be the start of is Carlos's appendix as powerful as Alex Albon's appendix? Because, I mean, coming back, having a drive like that, like... Because now we're talking him about being in, like, the Mercedes seat or the Red Bull seat. What sort of chaos does that start to throw into the mix? we are just at the start of the Carlos Sainz appendix saga.
Indeed, and unlike Alex Albon's appendix, which happened towards the end of the season, this is just at the right point. We can reap the full energy of the appendix.
Right, perfect. Should we move on to our predictions for the Japanese Grand Prix?
Yes, which is early this year.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. They're trying to be efficient, so I'm excited about this.
Sure, efficient. I like it.
It's going to rain, is your prediction?
I think it's going to rain, and I want to say I made that prediction without looking at any sort of weather forecast.
I will concur with that.
And as of right now, I just went to go look at the weather forecast, and it is forecasted to rain.
Good job. Have you considered taking a full-time job in fortune telling?
No, but meteorology.
Okay, good job. I have on here as Max has another DNF.
No, he won't let that happen.
So he won't let that happen. But if the team has the distraction, and remember, we're week to week. This is not like they get 2 weeks to like take a moment, go back, double check the car. They've got to get that car, put it on the back of a truck, get it to the Japan to get it out, put it back together again. Who knows what else is going to break for it?
There is 2 weeks between Australia
and
Suzuka.
There's two weeks? I thought it was 1 week.
Oh. We don't have a race next weekend.
Oh, well, that's
it is not Raw Creek right now.
Okay, so I'm not going to retract my statement. I think it's distinctly
possible. Or Reek Creek, whatever it is.
Raw Seek.
There it is.
So okay, I'm still not going to retract it. I think Max is going to have another DNF.
And then Carlos is on for another win, but Ferrari screw up the strategy.
Yes, I think Carlos is going to be like doing a great job. He's all his power is back, and then Ferrari is going to do what everybody thought they were going to do and swap the drivers.
I do have to say I really appreciated during this race that after Max DNF'd, they said they still were on plan A, and it's like, wait, was plan A for the leading car to blow up in front of you?
Remember, it's all scripted.
So many plans.
Exactly. And then my other one, although this is kind of put the kibosh on it because you decided to tell me that there's not a week between races, but I was going to say Williams only run one car again. Because I was going to say like, getting it fixed, getting it to Japan, I think that's a lot of work.
The facts of the race calendar causing issues for Dominic.
Yes. Why am I going to let facts get in the way of my conspiracy theory?
However, at this point, just to really screw our average, do you want to say this time they're going to give Alex's car to Logan?
Yes.
Sure. Why not?
And then my last crazy prediction, just because of how badly the way the car ended up after George's crash. Again, this is getting a bit tenuous because there's...
not realizing that there are 2 weeks between the races.
Yeah, I thought there was 1 week. So outside chance that Merck only run one car and then they decide to give it to George.
Do you want to come up with any predictions that take place with a 2 week time between races?
I am going to stick with all of these.
Okay. Way to bring down our batting average.
So remember that depending on your team and the time it takes to produce a chassis, it's really long. Like it's not 1 minute. It's not like a week. So if those chassis are genuinely broken, and in the case of Williams, they genuinely don't have another chassis. So if they can't fix it, 2 weeks is a very aggressive schedule with which to bake and make a flaw for the car. So I think there's still distinct chance here.
I mean, they essentially almost have 2.5 weeks because they had, like, they knew once it was crashed from Alex that they had to start making it back at the factory. So
true,
they have,
true.
It's not like George where you know, oh, we finished the race on Sunday and we're packing up car parts. They've known. Like,
yeah. No, it's possible. Although the question is...
Just find a Mercedes in a bin outside of Albert Park and like, oh, we don't need to take this piece of carbon fiber back with us. It's just extra weight.
And nobody will take it because it's a terrible car.
I'll add one to the mix, given that we are hoping for rain at this point in time. I'll say Daniel Ricciardo in the points.
Above or below Yuki?
Doesn't matter. He's in the points.
Okay.
Hey, at this point, Danny in the points would be a massive win.
True. I'm going to say that this is plausible, and he would be in front of Yuki at his home race.
Sure. Oh, they're going to be some good hats. I love the Japanese hats.
Oh, yeah. I hope they've had enough time. That people have remembered that it's in April this year, right? Versus
yeah, well, if anything, though, they're going to be ready this week based on your race schedule.
Indeed, they've misread it and they'll be ready early, which gives them an opportunity to refine and create the greatest hats ever.
I love the Japanese fans. They are. They just like, I could go see Suzuka 1 year just to go hang out with the Japanese fans. They look like they have an absolute blast.
Yes, it does seem like fun. Exactly. We are waiting for your feedback. As always, you can write into feedback@tinfoilhelmets.com and let us know about your conspiracies, feedback, and wants. Also, remember to tell your brilliant friends to like, listen, rate, and subscribe to our amazing podcast, from the Pacific Northwest. I would like to point out the moment I said three, the cat ran off.